first public workshop on districting. I'm Assistant City Manager Christy Schmidt, and I want to thank you for being here to help with this very important work. In 2017, the City Council passed a resolution to move to district elections for the four council seats beginning in November 2022. The purpose of tonight's meeting is to let the public know how they can help draw the boundaries of those districts and to begin getting feedback and hearing ideas. Representation is at the heart of city government and our democracy, so it's hard to overestimate the importance of the public's role in drawing our electoral districts. We have staff here tonight, including myself and our city clerk, Deborah Lopez, and our community relations manager, Kelly Hoover, but we'll be in the background. And tonight, the workshop tonight will be facilitated by our demographer, National Demographics Corporation, or NDC. Before I hand this over to Doug Johnson and Daniel Phillips from NDC for them to introduce themselves, I want to take a minute to thank the members of our Public Engagement Commission who are helping us to design the public outreach process for establishing districts. And they've advised us on a host of other issues from the mayoral term to holding night meetings. And so just want to thank them for all the work they've put into that. The members include Chair Pedro Paz, Sherry Bliss, Barbara Massey, Beth Schneider, Sylvia Uribe, Ray Ibarra, and Vinish Mannion, our youth member. So again, thank you very much to our Public Engagement Commission, and I will turn this over to NDC.
Thank you. I will start out. I'm Doug Johnson. I'm president of National Demographics, and it's a pleasure to be back in Goleta, if only virtually. I actually worked with the city way back at the time of first incorporation on similar issues. So it's a pleasure to be back working with you tonight. I'm going to introduce Daniel Phillips from my team, who will walk through the presentation. And we'll both be available for any questions and discussion when we get to that point in the presentation. Dr. Phillips is a recent UC Santa Barbara PhD program graduate and has a PhD in geography and has been working with NDC on our redistricting and GIS projects since he graduated, actually since before he graduated even. So it's a pleasure for us to both be here tonight, and we look forward to a good discussion. With that, I will hand over to Daniel.
Thank you very much. And it's a pleasure to be with you all tonight, especially me personally having this opportunity to work with an area that I'm so familiar with. And so what we're going to do is share a presentation with you that walks you through the process. And then at the end, there'll be a time for question and answer. So hold your questions to the end and we'll be able to answer any questions you might have. And then before I start, just want to share the instructions for the interpretation. So if just to visually show what was audibly expressed earlier, you see the way to access interpretation over Zoom. So now I will begin the presentation. So this is the City of Goleta Introduction to Districting. So we have three election systems that are commonly used by local jurisdictions. The first is this system called at-large, which is where council members are elected by all voters across the city. The second is the from district or residence elections system. And that is where council members have to live in a particular area, but they are elected by voters across the city, just as in the at-large system. And then the final system is the by district system. And that is the one that Goleta will be moving to with the 2022 elections going forward. And that is where each council member will live in a given area of the city and only voters from that particular area will be able to vote for that city council member. And so there will be four city council members, and each of them will be elected from a district. And so the California Voting Rights Act was written to specifically encourage bi-district elections. And so that is why the city of Goleta is moving to this new bi-district system. So here is the schedule for the process of moving to districts in this city. The first step is to hold public workshops like we're doing now, the first one being tonight. And then we'll have two more on June 26th and August 2nd. Those second and third public workshops will be held in person. And I believe the June 26th one is currently scheduled to be held at the offices of Goleta Union School District. And the August 2nd meeting is still to be determined, that location. That August 2nd meeting will also serve as the first official pre-draft public hearing number one. The law requires that there are two official pre-draft public hearings. By pre-draft, I mean before any draft maps are released. And so these hearings are designed to garner information about where people's neighborhoods are, where their communities of interest are, and we'll get into what that means exactly, and that type of information. And so the very last hearing, the August 17th, will actually take place during a regular city council meeting. And the city council will be asked to actually vote on what the communities of interest and neighborhoods are that should be kept together to the extent practicable in the districting process. Later on, there's going to be a deadline for submitting draft maps, and that's quite a bit later, January 14th of 2022. That will be the deadline for the public to submit draft maps. So there'll be plenty of time for the public to submit draft maps once the census data becomes available. And the full official census data will become available sometime in September or October, although there will be a chance to work with some estimated data before that. But once the official census data comes in, there'll be official maps that can be drawn. And then those will be released on January 25th and posted to the project website, which is drawgoleta.org. And I will show a link to that later on in this presentation. So after those are released, then there'll be two hearings on the draft maps. And these will take place during regular city council meetings. The first on February 1st, and then the second on February 15th. And this is when the city council and the public will come together to look over all the maps that have been proposed and to try to narrow it down to a few focus maps. And then eventually on March 1st to adopt one map to use for the next elections. So in this process, we have to follow certain rules and criteria in order to maintain compliance with federal and state law. So the first item is to follow federal laws, and paramount there is equal population. So the districts that are drawn should be very close to equal as possible. There's a little wiggle room that's allowed, so it doesn't have to be perfectly equal in population, but very close to equal, about plus or minus 5% discrepancy is allowed. So that's the first criterion we have to respect. The second is to follow the Federal Voting Rights Act. And the object there is we want to avoid dividing up or splitting areas where certain protected class voters concentrate. And so the Federal Voting Rights Act identifies certain historically marginalized ethnicities or communities, language minority groups that should be kept together and not have their vote diluted. The third is no racial gerrymandering. So while we can consider race and ethnicity, it can't be the only factor. It has to be one of many. And we want to, it shouldn't be the thing that guides us the most. So once we figure out the federal laws and make sure that we're following those, then we can also make sure that we're following the California law. And California actually recently passed a law called the Fair Maps Act, which requires us to follow a certain criteria order of priority. So you see these are at ranked order. So we try to follow these criteria before moving to this. So the most important one there is that the district should be geographically contiguous. So they're just one piece. They're not separated. They're completely connected. Number two is to make sure that neighborhoods are undivided and that we respect communities of interest, which are socioeconomic geographic areas that should be kept together. Number three is to draw boundaries for districts that follow easily identifiable lines like freeways and roads and canals and railroads and things like that. Number four is to make districts that are compact so that they do not bypass one group of people to get to a more distant group of people. So those are the four criteria that California lays out for cities, and it adds a prohibition. We shall not favor or discriminate against a political party in the drawing of districts. So that is something that we need to be careful not to do. And then we can also consider other traditional districting principles. One of those is to respect voters' choices / continuity in office. So we want to try to make sure that we give voters the chance to re-elect council members that they have elected in the first place to the extent possible. And lastly, we want to see if we can account for future population growth while still staying within, not straying too far from the equal population law. So this is the demographic summary for the city of Goleta, and these are based on estimates from the American Community Survey, although we will have more recent data that will be available shortly. And as you can see at the top here, there is a population total. It says 29,888, and that is based on the 2010 census. The ACS population estimate is a little more recent and has a little bit larger of a total. And so once we get the official census data, then we'll be able to work with those numbers. But to just get you a sense of the general picture of Goleta from the most recent data we have, you can see that each of the four districts must contain about 7,500 people. So you can see what the different age categories are and different ethnicities. And you can see that the Hispanic citizen voting age population is 24% versus the non-Hispanic white is 64% and smaller of other groups. So let's talk about defining neighborhoods. The first question we want to ask, and one of the goals of this first public workshop is first, what is your neighborhood? And second, what is its geographic boundaries? And so we want to figure out what the neighborhoods are to make sure that we can keep them in one district and not divide them to the extent possible. So examples of physical features defining a neighborhood boundary could include natural neighborhood dividing lines, such as highways or major roads, rivers, canals, and/or hills, areas around parks or schools, and other neighborhood landmarks. And in the absence of public testimony, such as what we're hoping to get today, planning records and other similar documents may provide definition. And I'll show you in a bit what some of those might look like. So this other term we hear, communities of interest. The first question we want to ask is, what defines your community of interest? It is, of course, a geographic area. It has a space and place, but it has a shared issue or a characteristic attached to it, some social or economic interest that's impacted by county or, in this case, city policies especially. So we want to hear about your community story and what makes it important and what makes it important to keep together in one district. A second question, what would this community of interest benefit from being included within a single district for purposes of its effective and fair representation? Or would it benefit more from having multiple representatives? It can be the case that a community of interest should actually be divided. So the law states that if we identify communities of interest that should not be divided, those are what we need to make sure to keep together. But we want to make sure that these definitions of community of interest have nothing to do with political parties, incumbents, or political candidates. So what are some possible neighborhoods or communities in the city of Goleta? Well, we're going to hopefully hear from some of you to find out what those neighborhoods or communities are. But one resource that we have provided to maybe stir people's thinking and to identify potential communities of interest is what we call a story map. And that is similar to PowerPoint, but it's interactive in which you can zoom around and pan around to look at different areas of the city. And there's a link here to the story map. So I'm just going to click on that and pull that up and show you what that looks like. So I'm going to stop sharing the presentation and show you what this story map looks like. So here you see that it is about communities of interest within the city of Goleta. And if you scroll down, you will see that there is a map that shows the sandy boundaries. And if you continue to scroll, you will see that there are different buttons that you can click that will show you different aspects of the city. So for example, if you click on city interior boundaries, that will show you these sub areas that have been defined by the city in its general plan. And so if you actually click in the map and drag around, you could pan and see what the different areas are that the city's general plan has identified. And so you can see the name of each of these areas. So this is just one possibility of what a potential community of interest within the city might look like. So we see that Old Town is everything here, and the Northwest residential area is over here. So that's something that you can play around with. You can click these two buttons to zoom in or zoom out to see where you live and where you happen to be. And that is just one example. We also have school attendance boundaries. So if you scroll down and click here, you will see the school attendance boundaries, and you can zoom in and look at where the Brandon Elementary School attendance area is, where Isla Vista is, Kellogg, etc. So there is a lot of data here, and I don't have time to go over it. And I encourage all of you to go and look at this yourself. There's a link to the story map on the city's districting page, so you'll have the opportunity to go and explore. So I do want to point out a few other things you can investigate. You can look at the impact of the Santa Barbara Airport to see where the highest noise levels are concentrated. You can scroll a little bit further down and look at land use and zoning, which are pretty similar, but a little different. And then you can look at citizen voting age population by race, ethnicity. And we often talk in this line of work about citizen voting age population, because that is what the courts have decided is the most relevant data point when figuring out how to comply with the Voting Rights Act. And so these, you can also just think of it as those who are eligible to vote. So you can see we break it down by race, ethnicity. And if you click here, you can see the percent Asian and the percent Black. But those groups are not very heavily concentrated in this city. What are heavily concentrated are the Latino population. So if you click there, you can see that there are different colors. And so you might wonder, okay, what do these colors mean? Well, if you go to the bottom left here, you can see there's a little legend button. And if you click that, you can see what each of these colors refers to. And so basically the warmer the color, the higher the percentage. And you can see that each of these are broken down by blocks. So we see higher concentrations of Latino eligible voters in Old Town. And to a lesser extent in parts of the Northwest and Southwest residential areas. You may notice this block here is red. So it does have a high concentration, a high percentage of Latino eligible voters. However, this is a large field. So very few people live there. So where we really see the higher concentrations are the places I identify. And finally, you can see percent white and see where those are concentrated, especially in the Northeast residential area. So if you want to explore a little more, you can see other demographics of interest, such as the percent income, $75,000 or higher. And so you see that wealthier people tend to live in these areas, while less wealthy people live in these areas. And so that is a sample of the data we've collected for the city of Goleta. And we hope that it's helpful in people figuring out where potential communities of interest might be located. So I'm going to stop sharing that and return to the presentation. All right, so we want to give you, the citizens, the opportunity to show us where your communities and neighborhoods are located. And to that end, we've provided different public mapping tools for different purposes. And so these tools are not quite ready to launch, but they will be ready to launch soon. And they'll be having the most recent population and demographic estimates. But we want to give you a preview of what these tools look like so you'll know what you'll have a bit available to you soon. So the first one I already shared with you, which is a simple learn about your community map, which is the story map. And then we have a simple review draft maps tool, easy use draw your neighborhood tool, a paper and Excel based simple draw draft map tool, and a powerful data rich draw draft map tool. So whether you use the powerful but complicated online mapping tool, Excel, the paper kit, or just draw on a napkin, we welcome your maps and we'll make sure to make sure that they get out to the public and can be produced in a form that is professionally drawn and presented for everyone to see and consider. So just briefly to go over what each of these tools actually looks like. The first one is the online interactive review map. And this is just to review, analyze, and compare maps, not to create them. And so once people's maps are drawn, they will be put onto this interactive map for everyone to look at and consider. And this is a sample map from Lake Forest. So you see, in this particular case, one map proposal. But there will be opportunities to look at other maps alongside that. The second tool we will have available is this paper public participation kit. And this is especially useful for those without internet access or who prefer paper. So it will just be something that looks like this, where a map of the city is presented. And the city is divided into small little chunks. And you'll see the number of people who live in each chunk. And so you will have that information available to you, and you can just draw on it with a pencil or a pen and turn that in. And then we can translate that to the interactive map for everyone to see. We also have a Excel tool that goes along with that paper map, where you can actually see how the population totals work out by plugging in the numbers into Excel using these identifiers that appear with each little chunk. So instead of the population numbers, you see little ID numbers. And then you can look at where those ID numbers are in the Excel, and that will calculate it for you, how many people live there. And by drawing your districts, you can see how well population balanced they are. So Excel does the math for you, and so that could be a handy tool. Then we have the District Art tool, which is really focused on depicting your community of interest or neighborhood. And so you basically use it like a paintbrush, where you paint different blocks until you've drawn your neighborhood or your community of interest. Now this tool is, I think I accidentally clicked on the link to the tool, so bear with me here. So this tool is only available in English, so that's one downside, but it is very useful for showing your community of interest. You can also use it to draw a district map, so you can draw different districts, but it's especially meant to show your community of interest or neighborhood. This tool, the Caliper Maptitude Online Redistricting Tool, is really the most useful and powerful tool when it comes to wanting to actually draw districts on the computer. And so you can actually, the program will compute for you the population totals in each district as you go along and draw them. It will also compute other statistics like the number of voting eligible Hispanics, et cetera. So these are all, this is our most powerful and data-rich online tool that we have available for this city. And so it does require a little bit of a learning curve to use, but it is more user-friendly than it used to be. There, it has a help guide, and it's just and one of the purposes of the workshop, hopefully the next workshop, but if not that, the third workshop will be us actually demonstrating for you how to use this tool and walking you through what goes into this. So this is the last slide for our presentation tonight. So I'm just going to end by asking a few questions and throwing it out to you. What is your neighborhood and what are its boundaries? Now, we know we don't have the mapping tools available, but we can still receive your input tonight as far as what your neighborhood is, and you can verbally tell us what are its boundaries, and we can do the best job we can to make sure we follow your guidance. What other notable areas are in the city and what are their boundaries? So maybe if you live in a particular neighborhood, but maybe you have an idea of where Old Town is or some other area of the city. So that is the second question. Any questions about the mapping tools? We know that we don't have those available to use right now, but we can answer some initial questions about what those might involve. And just a plug here to visit the website for more information, drawgaleta.org. The website is live. So that is where you'll find a lot of the information about the schedule. And you'll see a link to the story map there. And any information that might be helpful, you can find there. So that is it for our presentation tonight. And so we're going to open it up to any questions from the audience and any input you might have about your neighborhoods or communities of interest.
So Daniel, thank you. And I will note there's people are very interested in what you had to say. There's been a very active discussion in the chat. So we've got some hands going up that we'll go to them, and we'll also go to the questions in the chat. I think our first hand up is Cecilia Brown. Let's see if I can. Did we lose Ms. Brown? I think we lost Ms. Brown. She put her hand down. Allison Tamaninga, forgive me if I mispronounce that. But you can go ahead and unmute yourself, and we welcome your comment.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay. Well, I live in Old Town, which I think has fairly I don't know anything about the actual population numbers. And I know it's actually a pretty mixed, very mixed neighborhood. And I guess the boundaries seem fairly obvious to me, but I don't know, of course, anything about the population numbers involved in those boundaries. So I realized it was really interesting to find out that you need roughly 75,000 people per district. So I just think this will be a very interesting process. And thank you for the presentation, Daniel.
You're welcome. And I just to be clear, it's 7,500.
7,500. Oh, yes, of course, since we only have 30. I misdid my math. All right, but that's still, yeah. I don't know what the population of Old Town is. Probably more than that. I don't know.
Ms. Tamaninga, would you care to share what you believe the boundaries of Old Town to be?
All right. Roughly the 217 to UCSB, although I think there's a bit of Goleta on Old Town on the other side. I'm not sure about that. Maybe Ward Memorial, is that the boundary? And then the freeway, and then Fairview, and Hollister, but some a little south of Hollister, I guess, as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much. We appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you. Next, in the chat, we had Paul Mocker asked if the slides will be made available. And yes, definitely, they'll be going on the city website that Dr. Phillips plugged there at the end. And then he added a comment, north of 101 and south of 101 is a clear division and might even create separate communities of interest. With some additional details, so we'll capture those and keep those in the notes from today. So thank you for that. Spencer Brandt. Hello, Mr. Brandt. As he notes, the County Redistricting Commission is providing mapping tools that public can utilize to create maps. So Goleta to be doing the same. And I think he then gave a thumbs up. So I think then he got to Dr. Phillips' point where yes, actually Goleta will be making those mapping tools available. So thank you for that. And I should note, if other people have comments or questions, please do the raise your hand feature and we'll jump to you. Sylvia Uribe asked, will the rest of the website other than this specific tool be in Spanish as well? And Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the website has a translate this function where it will automatically translate.
It is supposed to be enabled if you use the Google Translate option.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So I'm sure people have seen that on many websites. And yeah, so it can be translated into Spanish, and I think it's about 200 languages that Google does. Mr. Mocker asked, will undocumented or quote unquote illegal aliens be included in the data? And in the census total population data, yes, that the census charges to count all people in a given jurisdiction, and that's how the total population figures are counted. Then he also noted that the self-identification of a person to a category that has not been traditionally defined, this important right. And yes, almost all the data that Dr. Phillips mentioned is self-declared. So when people fill out the census or when they fill out their American Community Survey, they are stating their ethnicity as they interpret it.
Can I add one thing about the undocumented?
Yes.
So they would obviously not be included in the citizen voting age population totals.
Good point. So, yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Peter, I'm not even going to try that last name, forgive me. I asked, are the UCSB faculty housing residents considered part of Goleta?
I can answer that. So the UCSB faculty and housing is, at least to my knowledge, technically outside the city of Goleta. And so that is, I believe the city limit is, well, in fact, I can, do you mind, Doug, if I show it on the story map?
Right, definitely.
So if we go back to the story map, you can see that, right?
Yep.
Okay. So I will go to this map that shows the zoning. If you scroll here and zoom in close, you'll see that the UCSB campus is everything here in the yellow, and the faculty housing, I believe, is concentrated in this area, but there's also some new houses that have been built over here. But you'll see that they are on the south side of the city limit of Goleta. So they would be outside of the city of Goleta.
Yeah. Thank you. Then we have Jennifer Smith. I think the 101 is a natural division, but it also separates a lot of single family areas from the higher amount of multifamily housing south of the 101. So yes, that could be viewed as a way of as separate communities of interest. But if there are, you know, housing is not the only thing, as Dr. Phillips mentioned earlier. So if there are things that connect communities across the freeway, connect those different communities in ways that should be kept together, certainly share those thoughts too. And then the final question listed in the chat is, are the opinions of old timers, say people who arrived prior to 1970, have a greater weighting in your survey conclusions? And no, the survey is when we talk about the American Community Survey data that's used, the CVAP numbers and other numbers, those are a very scientifically conducted survey, randomly chosen households, and lots of statistical work goes into making sure that they are reflective of the data, not of opinions. So, and as Dr. Phillips mentioned, ultimately the decisions will be made by the council based on the input of all the residents of the city. Sylvia Uribe asks if IV is considered for redistricting. Dr. Phillips, you want to take that one too?
Sure. So Isla Vista is outside of the city limits of Goleta. However, it might be relevant for community of interest considerations within the city of Goleta. Perhaps there are parts of the city of Goleta that are more impacted by Isla Vista such as the traffic that might be going in that direction, or perhaps just they're closer and have more of a student presence, perhaps. So if that is a relevant community of interest consideration, we can certainly make note of it.
Yeah, so, and if I can just clarify that a little bit. So the impact of Isla Vista, areas in the city that are impacted more by Isla Vista could be a definition of community of interest. But just to clarify, the population of Isla Vista is not in the city and thus is not counted towards the districts. And then there was, Mr. Rucker posted, and I'll get to the hand in just a second. Mr. Rucker posted, I thought he was confused by the answers about undocumented immigrants being included in the census versus not included in the voting rights data. Just to clarify, the total population counts come from the 2020 census. And so there, all people are counted. As Dr. Phillips is noting, the citizen voting age population data, which measures eligible voters, is used for Voting Rights Act compliance, and does obviously, since it's citizens, it does not count undocumented immigrants. So there are two different data sets, one for equal population compliance, one for Voting Rights Act compliance. And so the undocumented are counted for total population, but not towards the other category. And then Beth Snyder has her hand raised. Emily Snyder, if you can unmute yourself and go ahead.
Okay, I'm just a little confused. I always did understand that the faculty housing was in a dubious situation, but what city does the faculty housing belong to? It doesn't belong to Isla Vista and it doesn't belong to Goleta, but is surrounded or touched upon by each of them. And the newer housing particularly is right up against a residential area in Goleta. So how do we even think about those folks?
I can answer that. So the faculty student housing, the whole UCSB campus and Isla Vista are all in unincorporated Santa Barbara County. So they are not in any incorporated city. Now, like I said, there are impacts that are felt in the city of Goleta by those populations, but they are not technically within the city of Goleta. And so those population totals are not considered when we draw the districts for Goleta City Council.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
So thank you for that question. And I think if there are any other questions, we're happy to take them. And we'll give folks one more minute, and otherwise we will be wrapped up.
There was a question from Jennifer Smith asking, do you factor in how neighborhoods may have been shaped pre or post Fair Housing Act?
So it's a good question. The reality is we're looking for what defines neighborhoods or communities of interest today. And so it may be that the legacy of the Fair Housing Act and other housing decisions may shape today's communities or neighborhoods, or they may shape or impact one neighborhood, but not another one. So that's what we're looking for, is how do you who live here in the city today view your neighborhoods, regardless of whether that was whatever factors played into shaping that neighborhood. So if it's part of your neighborhood story, then yes, it's an important factor. If it's not, then it would not play in. So it's a good question. And that's the kind of thing we're looking to hear from you, the residents, today and at the future hearings as well. I would note as we wrap up as well that watch the city's website. We are with all the census data, and it's delayed us getting the tools up. But as soon as those tools go up, you don't have to wait for the next hearing. You can use the mapping tools that were mentioned to share a map of your neighborhood and a description of it, or just send an email anytime with your thoughts. But of course, we welcome you back at the next hearing as well. We did get a Q&A here. Do the current council members live in different parts of town? So I don't really know the exact addresses of council members offhand, but I do know they that back when we first looked at this, when the first started thinking about moving district elections, the council members were fairly well spread across the city. But that is one thing you may remember that Dr. Phillips noted. There are the prioritized criteria and there are the prohibited considerations, and where the council members live is not in the priorities list, but it's also not prohibited. So it's in those traditional criteria that fall after that. So that is something that can be looked at as people are drafting the maps if they wish to, after they address all the federal and state requirements. So, and then actually, this is a good question to end on from Ms. Uribe. Will the next presentation be the same as this one, or what are the differences? In these initial hearings, they are essentially the same. The only difference will be once those tools are launched, we'll switch from using the demonstration sites to using the actual city sites. But other than that, all these hearings are just spread the word. You won't be missing out. Other than the public comments, you won't be missing out on anything if you made this one and you missed the next one. So with that, these are lots of good comments. We appreciate it. And we're glad to see this level of interest. And we hope that all of you will be submitting neighborhood maps and eventually district maps. So, I was just about to ask if Ms. Schmidt had anything to close with. Perfect timing.
That's fine. And thank you very much. And I encourage anyone who wants more information or wants to go over this information again to join us on our next public workshop on the 26th of June, which is a Saturday. And there's information about that available on our website. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, everyone.
And we can adjourn.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hi, Galita. My name is Charlie Ebling, and I'm your Public Works Director and City Engineer. Today, I'd like to talk about Cathedral Oaks Road and the public's concern with the condition of the pavement of the roadway. This roadway is used extensively for vehicular traffic, but also for pedestrians and bicyclists and other transportation users in the area. It's an alternative to US 101, and we understand the importance of the road and the condition that it needs to be kept in for the citizens of Goleta. Cathedral Oaks was constructed in the early 1970s as a two-lane road that connected many of the neighborhoods along the foothills. The roadway has aged for the last 20 or so years and is in need of reconstruction. Reconstruction means that we are actually going to remove the surface approximately 14 to 16 inches deep and replace it with a whole new surface. An important part of pavement maintenance is understanding what's happening with the roadway today. The pavement is deteriorating. It's about 20 years old, and the surface is starting to lose what it's called its aggregates. So as the roadway becomes brittle, we start to see how the rocks are coming out of the surface of the pavement and landing on the shoulder. Another important aspect of understanding the condition of the Cathedral Oaks roadway is potholes that are starting to form. This tells us that we have to start doing the maintenance projects as soon as possible. Here we are on another portion of Cathedral Oaks roadway. We're out on the segment that's between Winchester Canyon Road and Kyrie Allen 101. In this segment, we're taking a look at how the pavement here is also aging. This surface is aging in a way where rocks and aggregates are coming out of the surface and being thrown over to the shoulder of the roadway. Eventually, potholes will start to form, and then further damage to the roadway will occur. One of the biggest considerations for doing pavement maintenance is how we fund the projects. We understand that it's vitally important to keep the roadway in good condition for the citizens. We also understand that the roadway is important to all the different users. One of the things we know about Cathedral Oaks and pavement throughout the city is that our pavement maintenance efforts are very expensive. From Los Caneros to the west end at Kyrial, the cost will likely be in the $15 to $18 million range to reconstruct the road. Unfortunately for the city, a lot of our roadways, especially Cathedral Oaks, are aging faster than the city can fund them. So while we do have funding sources such as Measure A and gas tax and other sources such as general fund, we know that we're going to need additional funding. We're asking citizens to be patient as the Department of Public Works and the city look at how we obtain funding for Cathedral Oaks. And in the meantime, we're going to be doing a couple segments of Cathedral Oaks. One segment is from Glenanny Road West in front of Dos Pueblos High School. And then the other segment will be right here from Winchester Canyon Road to Cai Real. With the funding we currently have today and some other payment needs around the city, that's what we can afford this year. I wanted to mention another item that I know is a frustration for the citizens of Goleta. The bike path along this portion of Cathedral Oaks out by Cai Real has been closed now since 2017. The reason it's closed is that we received an unusual winter storm back in 2017 that damaged a crib wall that's on the downhill side of the bike path, and that we're concerned that there are voids underneath the bike path. We in Public Works are diligently looking for additional funding sources so that we can get the repairs done and open things up. As we're talking about pavement maintenance, you may also see other projects being done around the city. And you may be asking yourself, why is the city spending money on those projects and not getting the pavement maintenance work done? Well, the answer to that is that we receive lots of different types of funding for different types of projects, and that those projects are funded with dollars that can't be spent on pavement maintenance. So for example, we will be replacing the Hollister Avenue Bridge in Old Town Goleta. That project is funded with a federal grant that pays just for that bridge replacement project. So we're going to continue to do those other vitally needed projects around town while we continue to look at how we fund pavement maintenance. Thank you for watching today. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, the citizens of Goleta, and I wanted to let you know that we are very committed as a city to addressing these issues here on Cathedral Oaks and throughout the city.
Put Puddles on the line. Yes, I know he's a dog. Puddles, you're going outside with Jennifer to do your business. Right by your favorite bush. The green one.
Brittany, time travel is possible. It's totally possible. Yeah, and what about the space-time continuum? The fabric of time is interwoven.
Some people choose unlimited calling. Others choose unlimited texting. But there's one thing not included in any calling plan. The common sense not to talk or text while you drive.
Puddles on the line. Yes, I know he's a dog. Puddles, you're going outside with Jennifer to do your business. Right by your favorite bush. The green one.
Brittany, time travel is possible. It's totally possible. Yeah, and what about the space-time continuum? The fabric of time is interwoven.
Some people choose unlimited calling. Others choose unlimited texting. But there's one thing not included in any calling plan. The common sense not to talk or text while you drive.
Hi, my name is Allison Gray, and I'm the director of the Goleta and San Ynez Valley Libraries. When people talk about libraries, they mostly think about the physical services, coming into the library, checking out materials, attending programs, things like that. But there are a lot of virtual services that we provide as well. We provided them before COVID, but during COVID, we greatly increased the number of services we have. And a lot of people don't know about them. So I'm hoping that you will join me today in a tour of our website, and I will show you the many services that we have that you can access 24/7 from your home computer, phone, device, whatever. So come on along and let's check it out. So let's get started. Let's start with the top blue bar. If you click on catalog, that brings you to the Black Gold catalog. And as you know, we're part of the Black Gold Consortium of 7 libraries, 4 in Santa Barbara County. So what you do is take your cursor up to the blue bar and where it says branch, scroll down to Goleta, click on that. And then when you search, it will bring up only items that we have. You need to go to the left-hand side under assigned branch, click Goleta Library, and now you'll see. Initially it said there were 242 copies. Now it says there are 30 copies. And if we don't have them here at Goleta on the shelf, you can place your holds for another copy in Buellton or Solvang. We'll get it for you. Let's go back to the home page and click on e-library, and you can see that this is ebooks, audiobooks, and downloadables. We have a number of downloadable materials for you to borrow with your library card. ProQuest eBook Central, that tends to be the more academic materials, university presses, things like that. All you need is your library card. OverDrive has thousands of eBooks and e-audiobooks. They now have magazines. They have lots of stuff for kids and teens, and they are usable on many different devices. So OverDrive is a great resource. Hoopla is a super site. It has incredible movies, audiobooks, magazines, graphic novels, almost everything you can think of. Same thing with Canopy. Canopy is an amazing site of movies. They are particularly good with documentaries, children's materials, and foreign films. And then the last one is Enki Library, and they publish small press materials. They also will help you publish your own book, and they'll even help you choose the font to use. They'll help you design your book cover. So it's pretty great if you're an author. So that's the e-library section. Now we're going to hover over information. And I'm not going to go over everything in information, but I did want to point out just a couple of things. If you go under the FAQ section, library card, and click on that, you can get a library card two ways. Come to the library with your governmentally issued ID. If it has your current address on it, that's all you need. If it doesn't have your correct address, just bring us a piece of mail that does. Now, if you can't get to the library during our current open hours, just come to this FAQ library site and you'll see the third paragraph, how do I obtain a digital library card? You can click on that online application, or we even have a video that tells you exactly how to do this process. It's great to get a library card. It gives you access to all of our services. And once you get it plugged into your device, you won't have to type in that number again. It just makes things easier. So we encourage you to get a library card. So back up at the information bar, let's go to ideas to keep busy at home for all ages. One of the things our staff did when we were at home during COVID, we created a really vast website of great sites for you and your family. So they're divided by adult, children, and teen. So you'll see there's a huge amount of content here. It's all free. We're going to go back up to information, and we're going to click on Library of Things. The Library of Things is a collection of three-dimensional materials, a lot of technology, for children, teens, and adults, essentially to try out before you buy. So you can check them out for 3 weeks, see if you like it, and then you can decide whether you want to buy one or not. You may have heard a lot about virtual reality goggles, but are they for you? You could check out a couple pairs of ours, compare them, contrast them, and decide if you want to spend the money. So it's a really great collection of unusual things, and we hope that you take advantage of it. Okay, I'm going to move on to I want to and hover over that. Now, this is where a lot of our most useful information comes from. Access BrainFuse Help Now is a homework help site with live tutors from grade K through college. Access BrainFuse Job Now, Bet Now will help people looking for jobs, give them critiques on their cover letters, will help vets find jobs. Request a Craft Kit is a great program. We send out 2 kits for each child every month, so you can request it there. Request Homework Help, you can get online tutoring. Request Tech Tutoring, we have staff who will help you with your devices. They'll make an appointment and help you online. And you'll see we have a section for children, and we have a lot of recommendations, reading lists for children, very helpful. Same thing for teens. And teens who are looking for community service work can get credit by doing book reviews online for us. Let's go home. And then you'll see there are 5 buttons. And just very quickly, online research. We've created a huge section of databases that you can go to that are free. Then let's go back to the home button. Staff picks. Staff have created a number of curated bibliographies for you. Just click on the bibliography and it will give you a sentence about what each book is about to see if it looks appealing to you. Going to go back home. You can view your account. Just put in your library card number and your password. You can see what you've got checked out. You can renew items. So that is a tour of our website done very quickly. At the bottom, you can go to our Facebook page and our Instagram page. Thank you so much for watching. I hope that it's been of some help. If you have any questions, feel free to call or email our very helpful, caring staff. They're here. They're ready to help you. Stay safe, be well, and thank you so much for using the Goleta and Santa Ynez Valley Libraries.